SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Friday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone. 964 if you're listening to Sirius XM online, and at our website too, stevebick.com. The good news is I got the computer back, and I got to give a little nod to the Apple Care team, the Genius Bar. It was actually a very painless sequence, and the repair actually came in half of what they quoted. They said $475, and it came in at $280. I was very pleased. And not only that, they also noticed that something was going on that with the screen. The screen was kind of cloudy a little bit, you know. You've seen this, right? You try to clean it with turpentine, whatever, lighter fluid. Try 17. No, I didn't do those things. But they called me. First I get a text and they said, your computer's ready to pick up. And then about a half an hour later, they called. They said, you know, you've got a recall situation. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, your screen is cloudy and it was a design flaw, whatever. And they said, we'll replace that. I said, really? All right. How much extra? A couple extra hours? All right. So I drove down to Albany, 4 o'clock. It's like a new computer. I'm delighted. So the bad news is I've misplaced my phone. So this is, you know, it's somewhere in the house. But I suppose if I've got the computer, I can do without the phone, at least until after the show, or in the little 2.5 minute windows that I have to scurry around. I get, there's a lot of things I can do in those 2 minutes, you know, some of the things you'd expect, and then coffee. Years ago, I could smoke a cigarette in 2.5 minutes. JJ used to laugh at me. When we were on the 17th Street Causeway studio, behind Big Louie's, and Bistro Mezzaluna, and somehow I could rifle through a cigarette in 2.5 minutes, like that scene in Mad Men with Roger, boom, the cigarette's gone. Well, we've gotten to the end of this week, and looking forward actually to the action at Penn tomorrow. And the more I handicap that card, Nick Tamaro is going to come in at around 10:30. And Nick and I'll look at the pick five sequence, the cross country, which has got the Pennine Ridge and Belmont and then the four races from Penn National. Some of those short priced favorites that we talked about with Todd Mostoller yesterday, they don't have to win, and that includes Call Paul. And I certainly, you know, happy to see Call Paul do well for Gary Young. He does not have to win that race. I got to tell you, there's a couple of horses. The closer we looked at it, the more interesting it got. I there's a lot of competitive racing tomorrow, and that includes Churchill. We'll talk to Marty. He'll be actually a little later in the show. He's helping. Who did he say? His nephew? He said he's helping. He's got to help, I think, his nephew move some furniture. So so Marty had to push back to later in the morning. So we'll get him around 11. Talk about what went on at Churchill last weekend. And tomorrow, they've got an overnight stake. Unbelievable. The Mighty Bow. And Morticia is not running in that race, by the way. If those of you that have already looked ahead to tomorrow, Morticia is going to run Sunday. So take Morticia out, it's still a nine-horse field and still very competitive. And Bobby's Wicked One is a interesting addition to this. I was kind of mystified at first, you know, seeing that Al Stahl was going to try him in a turf sprint. And, you know, coming out of that Churchill Downs, the grade one, where, you know, it took Mattioli to beat him. And I, you know, keyed off of Bobby's Wicked One in that spot on Derby Day. And he's going to try the grass. He's very versatile. He's had a couple of placements on a wet track. He's, you know, very competent, obviously, on a dry track. And now he's going to try turf. He's a Spitestown out of Gossapermare. And I will not question Al's. Al's trying him here. It's interesting. He's going to be a short price. We have one of the house horses in here, Anguston, running back. We're just fans. Extravagant Kid for Brendan Walsh. Will Call trying to right the ship a little bit. Starting to be a little bit of time between drinks for Will Call, the 5-year-old. He's got to straighten up and fly right. And then the Aristides. So we'll talk that pick five, pick four sequence at Churchill tomorrow with Marty. It's a really competitive sequence. And the more favorites, if one favorite, you know, doesn't win, it's going to pay. If two don't win or three, it's going to be tremendous. And if the favorites falter, you know, throughout the sequence, it's going to be boxcars. So, I mean, I'm going to focus on Penn tomorrow and a little bit of Belmont as well with the Pennine Ridge, which is good. And actually, the nightcap after the Pennine Ridge, which is a state-bred 6-furlong turf sprint allowance, that's super competitive too. So the late double tomorrow at Belmont. The full card is actually better Sunday, curiously, than tomorrow. But the Pennine Ridge, the 8th and the 9th, off the turf today in New York after the storm. Yeah, that storm couldn't wait, couldn't hold back and show up, you know, later on. And of course, they had the late start. You know, they got this coordinated scheduling with Churchill on Thursdays with the evening card at Churchill. That was the motivation on the twilight racing on Thursdays at Belmont. And if it, you know, if the day had started at its normal 1:30, it would have been okay. Because the rain, when the rain came, you know, things would have been over. But instead, it kind of threw a wrench in the work. And as a result, the ninth first got taken off the turf, and we were in the ninth. I didn't get a chance to mention it yesterday with Minute Mouse, and we're kind of excited about it. She was okay in there, frankly. And not only did the race come off the turf, then another 45 minutes later, it became obvious the ninth wasn't going to be run. So they canceled the ninth, and you got a pick six carryover into today, 19,000 and change. They are off the turf today at Belmont. They'll, you know, do what they can to, you know, make sure that the turf course, you know, you want it next week is when you really need it. And you also need it for, you know, some good races like the Pennine Ridge tomorrow and so forth. So anyway, there's a quick advisory of what happened. Before the rains came, there was a notable race earlier on the card, and, you know, strictly as a prep, Dunbar Road showed up for Peter Brandt and for Chad, and, you know, the filly that would have loved to have run in the Kentucky Oaks, she, you know, kept kind of watching for a spot, but she hadn't run since end of March at Gulfstream. So Dunbar Road gets back into action yesterday, and a nice tune-up for the Mother Goose. And the Quality Road filly, who pretty much was a bridge jumper's dream, when it came to the show money. And she, you know, 270, 210, 210. 270, actually, pretty good. It was a pretty good win tote, actually, for a 2-5 shot. And what did she take? The show pool. I know that I saw that. Where's the show pool? No. Yeah. I know that Dave Grenig, she took, you know, 96% of the show pool. And came through easily, won by half a dozen lengths, give or take, and look for her in the Mother Goose. So she took a good, you know, good little spin out there to tighten up after having, you know, lost the opportunity on the outside looking in when it came to the Kentucky Oaks. There was also the races that we talked about earlier in the week at Churchill, and this is unbelievable that you can't get the chart to come up here, and I will bear with me while I, my God, there it goes, finally. Mentioned a couple of spots yesterday. Based on, you know, variety of visitors and topics. And you had that good first level allowance that opened the card last night at Churchill. And Dane Kubiski, color guard with Corey Lannery, took that down. And then later, the maiden race that we were interested in, the sixth. And in here, Mount Brave, the Malibu Moon Philly, first-time starter for Steve Asmussen, ends up your $9.40 winner. This is actually a filly out of Wild Gams, the very nice Wild Gams, and that Wild Gams invokes Benny Perkins? Yes? Yeah? Anybody? Anybody on Twitter? I think so. Wild Gams. I think Benny Perkins, if I'm not mistaken. And this is a Stone Street homebred with Peter Lydell. And she won nicely. And, you know, the 2-1 favorite, Club Car, who we had mentioned for the balls, Ben Goldberg, had to settle for third. That was her third start. That Istan again. We mentioned two. Brary Jones was second. And Bo Lane's second-time starter for Catman, Blip Says Bye. She was okay. She was okay. So that was some of the action we were keeping tabs on yesterday. Greg Foley also won that allowance late in the card. And Brary Jones did get a win as a breeder with Sanders and Hirsch. As well, yeah, let's pause that because I want to bring Marcus Hirsch in without a break. We'll take a break before Jay Pribman joins us. Let me do that, and we'll get going. Let me give you the lineup today. Marcus Hirsch is going to join us first, and we've been trying to get to Marcus last week and or earlier in the week, so we'll catch up with him on a couple different topics, including Epsom Derby tomorrow and at Arlington, the Matron tomorrow. We haven't had much Arlington conversation yet, so we'll catch up on it with Marcus, and we'll also get his early – or not early, but his, I suppose, early Belmont and late on his Triple Crown thoughts. Marcus wasn't in Louisville this year, but looking forward to talking to him. Jay Pribman's going to join us after Marcus. And we got a variety of things to talk about with Jay. That includes the the week in California, which got even more difficult yesterday. We'll talk Belmont Advance with Jay. We'll talk what went on with Senator Feinstein's office, as well as the governor's office yesterday, and then a couple of things that came to head at Santa Anita yesterday, including apparently the firing of Dan Eidson now, basically ending any racing office continuity or logic. This is the latest piece of news that came late yesterday. There was also the floating again of an entry system involving veterinarians signing off on entries, and this will be just another insane layer of God knows, I don't even know how to term it, but this was floated about 6 or 8 weeks ago, and it made no sense then. It makes no sense now that veterinarians are going to sign off 3 or 4 days ahead of horses actually running. They're going to sign an entry form. And other than serving to somehow now paint veterinarians, it's not enough. It's not enough to paint the horsemen as somehow, you know, responsible. Now we're going to throw veterinarians under the bus too. We're going to do everything we can out there to embarrass them. On a Wednesday when entry day comes, you're going to sign off. Okay, I sign off. And then on Saturday, if a horse goes wrong, the veterinarian signed off. It's so preposterous. The right thing for everybody to do is to just not enter. It is just walk away, honestly. I mean, this one is bizarre. It was laughed at 2 months ago. Now we're gonna reinstitute this and try. I don't know. The only possible reason for this would be to be able to put veterinarians in a bad light. That seems like that's the objective. It's just amazing. The Breeders' Cup, also, we'll see what Jay has to say about the Breeders' Cup, who appears to absolutely want to run this year's Cup at Santa Anita. Fasig Tipton next week has got a 2-year-old in training sale that's going to happen as well at Santa Anita. So we'll talk to Jay, and then later, Ed DeRosa, Rick Hammerly, Nick Tamaro, Marty McGee, and more. Right now, Marcus Hirsch standing by. Marcus, good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you? No one signed off on my appearance 3 days ago, so we could both be liable.
Exactly. Well, I am glad to get you, because, and actually the timing is very good, considering that they're going to run today at Epsom. You got the Coronation Cup early and then the Oaks later. Want to get your thoughts on tomorrow's Epsom Derby, where it's basically Aidan O'Brien against the rest of the country. And I haven't talked to you about your Triple Crown season thoughts, and looking ahead to Belmont as well. And then Arlington, you got a nice running of the Matron tomorrow. And we haven't talked about Arlington season yet, which is now well underway. Let's start there.
Well, I guess the big story is the big is in relative terms. They've been unable to use the turf course, which is unprecedented the entire month. I saw the precip stat at O'Hare, which is 12.8 miles as the crow flies to the southeast. I think they've had, like, for the month, they were 3.7 inches above normal rain. Jeez. So, yeah, they didn't even carve any turf on Sunday. I've not seen handle figures recently. I know that opening weekend was not very encouraging. I mean, Hawthorne was a disastrous handle meet. And then, you know, how circuits are create momentum within race courses on them. So between race courses on them, excuse me. So that's not a, I don't think, I mean, Arlington ran 4 days this past week because of the holiday. They threw in a Sunday and then Monday, but they've been 2 days a week up to then. So they've got an advantage as far as creating race cards, but I thought the cards, especially given the turf situation, had built pretty well, and their backstretch has more horses than in past years. We'll see how things go when they start adding days. Run 4 days in June and July. I'm sorry, July and August. Don't quote me on any of that. They're expanding the race week. They alternate days because of holidays and stuff too, but never more than a standard four. But even that's going to spread things a little bit. Of course, with all this backlog of turf horses that haven't gotten to run, I think that's going to help things for a while.
True.
In a more general Illinois racing sense right now, the spring legislative session in Illinois ends June 1st, and I know that several racing entities are feverishly at work this week because of the chance of an expanded gambling bill that could come up in the legislature today even. And several of the players on the Illinois scene are poised to, I mean, they've been working already trying to have their interests represented in what would come out as far as expanded gambling. The big thing in the state is that if Chicago is going to get a casino, there is no casino in Chicago proper yet. The city probably wants one. And some of the racetracks would like to have casinos at their facilities as well. One question being whether Arlington is one of those. I know that before the meet and from what I've heard, Arlington has been more focused on the sports betting side of this equation. Which is well and good in some ways, and that's something that would probably be easier to have happen legislatively. However, the iterations of this legislation that I've heard about give 0% of money to purses at any of the state's racetracks. So, I mean, for Horsemen's Group, it's obviously a non-starter, and it's hard to see how that benefits the racing product other than perhaps keeping the tracks open a little longer by giving them some small revenue stream when they are struggling so mightily right now.
Well, and this has been, I mean, this is, it's 20 years of you know, twisting in the wind.
Well, yeah, it has been close to that. I feel like, yeah, I mean, there's so much gambling in the state right now that it's not going to be a panacea. The purses aren't going to go through the roof even if the tracks get casinos. Whether Arlington and their parent company, Churchill Downs Incorporated, want a casino at Arlington is an open question right now. They now own a majority share, CBI does, in Rivers Casino, which is 13 miles away and is currently the largest casino in Illinois. A lot of people wonder, you know, whether they want to have another casino so nearby. It seems like from the way things have gone and the positions that they appear to have taken and the way that lobbying has gone in the legislature this year and from comments made by various Arlington officials, I'm not sure that they're advocating strongly for that. So I don't know that that's even something that's on the table for the flagship track of Illinois racing. I just know that, I mean, Hawthorne, I don't know that they can survive more than another year, and I don't know what direction Arlington's going. I tried to remain kind of optimistic about things. on this circuit, but it's the light is getting dimmer and dimmer.
Unbelievable. You know, I don't know what to say.
Arlington does have a safe poly crack.
That's true.
Breakdown
that's true.
Statistics are excellent. And the turf course is excellent. I have to say, I have to commend the racing office, and they've done a great job. The cards have been surprisingly playable, and I do encourage people to open their minds to it. Just when you peruse races all over the country, it's just hard to find fields of more than seven, a lot of cases. And they have managed to put together consistent cards where at least the entries are above that, and you can consider getting a slightly better prices because of the number of entries. And I thought the Saturday card was pretty good. With the amount of rain they've had this week, I just don't know if they're going to be getting back on turf again then when there were some grass races carded. But if they can get the course tried out, I look for a good June of racing at Arlington, actually.
Nice. Well, I we're always obviously rooting for. It's one of the great facilities in the entire sport, and I can't even imagine Chicagoland.
The American racing landscape without
correct
track in the third largest metropolitan area.
Yeah,
that is an issue that I don't. And maybe there's a lot more discussion going on behind closed doors than, with the powers that be within the sports / industry. But I don't know that, I don't feel like that's really properly been acknowledged, because when you start to lose footholds and population bases.
That's exactly right.
I think things really start to become problematic as far as developing customers, fan bases, and having a nationally viable sport.
Agreed, and this serves into that conversation, Marcus, where you get the people that, oh, there's too much racing, and what do we need? These C tracks, and this is hardly a C track, but that.
I agree with A and B. I think there's too much racing, and I do think that the proliferation of racing venues that are supported solely through revenue streams coming outside of the horse racing product is to the detriment of the sport. But that is, they don't even have that in Chicago. They're getting by on a tiny subsidy from the State Department of Ag and whatever they can scrounge up from, derive from betting on the product. And so, A, that's not part of that model, and B, it's not you can say it's a B track now, but it's an A market.
Exactly, and Boston, New England, Suffolk. If you don't have venues where people get introduced to the live product, it's hard to have a healthy feeder system for horse players. There's a certain percentage in this era that have been drawn into the game from. From watching on TV and being introduced, whether it's via TVG and by national broadcasting of big events, that might be their first exposure. But the lion's share, the normal avenue is being brought to a racetrack, seeing how much fun and how exciting it is, and intriguing the wagering game is, and getting drawn in that way. And you can't, Boston, Chicago, you can't lose markets like this. Let's talk about the Matron, which certainly is interesting.
I think it's a very well, LaForce is running in the Santa Maria. I don't know if your listeners know that or not. She was cross-entered.
Right.
She stayed home. So, I didn't really fancy her anyway in her current form. But it's a below-standard grade 3 race, I think. I don't have I don't have a strong opinion on this race at all. It's a mishmash. Daddy's who is going to make the lead. She ran well last year, finishing second. I mean, she's eight now. I don't know that she's going to be as good, even with a prep this year, which she didn't have last year, as she was last year. But she is trained by Larry Rivelli, and as dominant as that outfit has been at Arlington recently, he's taken it to a new level so far this year. The stats are completely off the charts, and all the horses that look like they might fire are firing. This one's going to get the lead, but I just don't know if she really stays. The two that, you know, kind of semi-logically, I thought were possibilities were Napoli Spirit, who's won over the Arlington Poly track, and I think is in good enough form to be competitive, and Coach Whip, who we have no idea how she runs on synthetics because she's never raced on one, but she has sort of pedigree that would lend itself to that, and she's run against just good horses. The winners of her last few races, Icky Masha, went back again, and Pimlico beat against a modest group, and then Beau Recall in New Orleans, who came back and won at Churchill very well, and Mitchell Road, who was also impressive in Baltimore two weekends ago. That's better competition than any of the horses she's running against Saturday at Face. However, I mean, if I'm playing this race as part of a Monterey sequence, I'm getting as much coverage as I can because I don't firmly have a strong grasp on it at all.
Well, I'm a Coach Whip fan, and in fact, we talked to Jack Sisterson about her when we had him on to discuss his upset of the Chick Lang. And
yeah, well, I mean, the interesting thing about her is she comes out of the longer race at a mile and a half. But I'm not on the form. I'm not entirely convinced she even wants 9 furlongs. But I guess in this group, she'd probably stay as well as anybody.
That's fair. Well, the matron tomorrow at Arlington, and we can go to a slightly higher class when it comes to one of the great races in all the world tomorrow, Marcus, at Epsom, and we got the Derby and Aidan O'Brien with a phalanx.
Yeah, he has 7 horses. In this race, it seems like a lot, and I think he's won it 7 times too. His last win, as I'm sure people recall, was with that rank out 41 outsider. He's got some of those, so I guess he has 2 at the top of the anti-post markets in Sir Dragonet and Broom. I want to be skeptical of Sir Dragonet, who has kind of come out of nowhere. Debut until this year. He had a race at Tipperary, and then he ran in the Chester Vaz. But I have a hard time dismissing him. His race in the Chester Vaz, where he was I think 6.5 to 1 or something. I think it was O'Brien's won that race. Like, he wins it every year since the beginning of time, and he had several horses in it. I know Norway, who's also in the Derby, was in that race, and this horse was maybe 3rd or 4th. Favorite among his horses, Donick O'Brien rode him. He just sat at the back of the pack. He's a pretty heavy-headed horse with a very European sort of stride, but he started moving 3 furlongs out. I mean, Chester is a very particular track, too, with it's kind of small with tight turns. So on the turn, he started moving up, and with 3/8 left, with a quarter to run, he had already put his head in front without being asked at all, and proceeded to just demolish that field. I really thought he's one of those horses where the faster he went, the better his way of going looked. And he's got a draw that supposedly on the outside is better for this race on Saturday. He's kind of a short price, Ryan Moore taking over. I'm not against him, but it's hard to be. I can't. There are too many questions about him to get too excited at whatever price he's going to be, probably 7-2 or something like that. And Broom is the source that they're betting in the second favoritism. I thought he was obviously was good. As a two-year-old, he was an upper-level performer. I didn't think he was anything special, but watching his races this year, he's a horse that might have just improved a lot. At three, he won very well last time in his trial for this race, and I think there's no question that he'll probably stay pretty well. But he hasn't shown the flash that Sir Dragonet did at Chester. The third favorite in the race is not Nathan O'Brien. That's Telecaster, who was supplemented to this race after winning the Falcon Stakes at York, which is one of the major Derby preps. And this is another horse that came out of obscurity just this year. So it's like a pretty significant force in the division. His debut win, I think it was at Windsor, over a mile and a quarter. He went to the front, set an easy pace, and just completely destroyed that field. And his Dante Stakes, I thought, was excellent, too. He just tracked another horse, was rated patiently, went to the front, turned back champion, too darn hot. Too darn hot came back and was defeated in the Irish 2000 Guineas. Maybe didn't progress from two to three. He was a spectacular two-year-old in the way that people might have hoped. But I still think that he's a very high-quality animal. And I have a feeling that, maybe he didn't run as well in Ireland because Telecaster just took something out of him with the way that he treated him in the final furlong when he just disdainfully ran away from this horse. I think Telecaster, who is an inside draw, which is considered unfavorable, I feel like the sample sizes people are using to make judgments on that are a little small to be taken with complete seriousness, but he's going to obtain a forward position, but showed he can rate off another horse comfortably last time. I think he's going to be formidable. He may be a little bit of value in the race. There are plenty of other possibilities here. This is such an unusual race, the course configuration, the long downhill stretch in the straightaway, then the final 100 yards uphill, got to take the corner well. It's a great race. It's always fun to watch. And I think this is a super competitive field with a lot of horses that I think have the possibility to step up and be pretty good Derby winners.
It does feel like a fun group. And yesterday we had our first conversation about it with Dick Powell, and Telecaster kind of appealed to me. And I read a couple of different previews, Racing Post and at the races website, and I thought Telecaster felt like that sort of now, the now horse at a square price.
Well, yeah. He's going to have first run on the two that are shorter prices than him. And because he's trained by Hugh Morrison, not Aidan O'Brien, as Ocean Murphy riding instead of Ryan Moore, I think you get a little more bang for your buck. And he's not exposed. With just a couple of starts and what he's shown so far, the sky's the limit for this horse. And, when you get a horse that's not, I feel like the public is often slow to react when it's lesser connections and the horse wasn't hyped coming into these races. So I think you're going to add a couple odd points to that, which, if you're looking for a value proposition, perhaps he's that.
Marcus, before we talk quick review of your Triple Crown thoughts, I did want to ask, I saw that you did the advance on the Monmouth action this weekend, and that Tale of the Cat, where there's a couple of horses cross-entered, and I wasn't sure if you knew anything more about Empire of War and Dunf, who seems like he's turning up everywhere there's an entry box.
I don't know about Dunf. Empire of War runs at Monmouth.
He does run at Monmouth, so he will forego. Wow, interesting. Okay.
He is the horse to beat in that race, I think. I thought he'd run well in Murphy at Pimlico, and he was scratched from there, and I think it's cross-entered the Penn Mile, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. Maybe he didn't winter well, because you could put down his most recent race to Softer Going, and he had won well over Softer Going last fall, but like with wet dirt tracks, every wet turf horse is not created equal. Not all horses are going to be quite comfortable on those. But the Monmouth race for 75,000 with the Pennine Ridge and the Penn Mile on the same day in the same division in the same region, it was always going to struggle. But I thought, considering that, there are some interesting horses in that race.
I'm intrigued, and it doesn't change the Penn Mile considerably, but it does take a horse out that was going to see some money. Empire War, interesting. All right, I appreciate that.
Well, I mean, I think a Thread of Blue is going to take all kinds of, that's no secret, but I was really impressed with the race he ran at Churchill. I thought under less than ideal conditions, the way the course was, and I thought that was a pretty high quality field for that particular race, and cutting back to a mile, I think he's going to run great.
Well, we're going to talk more about that group. Real News and Casa Creed, and then I thought that the Asmussen Fluminescence moving to the turf was a little dangerous at a price. It should be. It's a good card overall. We talked extensively yesterday about it with Todd Mostoller, and we'll visit it with Nick Tamaro in a little bit. Marcus, right. Before we wrap, your thoughts. We didn't get a chance. Obviously, we didn't see you in Louisville and Baltimore. So let me give you a quick review of your impressions of the first two stops of the Triple Crown.
Well, you will see me in beautiful Elmont, New York, which I'm looking forward to. I travel tomorrow, and it's going to be exciting to see. I mean, the car is going to be great. The Belmont itself, I mean, we'll see what happens. Let's see. I mean, I don't know. There's still so many questions to be answered. So many horses didn't run back and aren't running back. We've got the whole maximum security question to be answered. I mean, Max, I still cannot, in the end, wrap my head around the fact of where this horse started out. I mean, it's either, to think that the horse could have reached in it. I know that the trainer said that he was sure nobody would claim it, but in the end, you never really know. I mean, you just never know. This horse could have been claimed for a relative pittance. I was definitely a maximum security skeptic going into the Kentucky Derby. I'm saying nothing about the disqualification, whether it was merited or not, or any of that thing. But I don't know that anybody was beating him. I don't think anybody was going to beat him, regardless of what happened in that race. Obviously, that's open for discussion. But I think he's. I think he was at least an above-average Derby winner by recent standards. And the crop might not be that bad. I mean, it's just so fluid right now. I mean, I'm really interested to see if Tacitus run back. I think he was kind of made for the Belmont all along. We know that Pletcher is always tough when he waits back with these horses after the Derby run. And it's going to be really interesting to see how War of Will can bounce back. I thought he was compromised in the Derby as much by the trip before the incident took place on the far turn by his freshness and being inside and stuck behind horses on dirt for the first time in his life. He had barely run since his Louisiana Derby was a non-race for the most part. He'd barely run in so long. I think everything's set up for him to run better in the Preakness, but now, he's going to have to bounce back again. And instead of having all that extra time and rest, we're talking about a horse who's, the Derby, he didn't get a completely fair chance, but he did have to run. And then to take the 2-week turnaround, we know how demanding that is. I think it's great that he's running back into Belmont, and Mark Cassie has shown again and again that he will not. He's not avoiding any spots. He's not waiting on races. He's sending his horses out into battle for better or worse. But in that outfit, they're racehorses, and they're going to race.
Very much so. He's got owners that like to get their horses out there, and It's actually been an incredible few weeks for the Cassie team, from Kentucky to Woodbine to Baltimore. Marcus, I'm excited and glad we'll be able to see you in New York, and we'll see you this week. We'll see you and Jay and Dave Grenig and the team. So I appreciate the rundown from Epsom to Arlington Heights.
Yeah, you want to quit Prairie Meadows, Chad? I'm up for that too. Anything you want.
We'll You're the best.
That'd
be great. That would be terrific. Marcus, thanks. All right, DRF Hirsch, everybody, and Marcus, who can crop up anywhere. He does a lot of the international. He's become the international correspondent, and makes the trip to Dubai and so forth. So I didn't realize that he was coming to New York. I thought, given that we hadn't seen him actually, and usually comes to Louisville, and Marty always makes the trip. And of course, Dave Grenig had a family obligation this year from Baltimore, so he couldn't come down. So Marcus and Jay and Dave Grenig in New York. And Jay Pribman is with us. We'll continue right on. And Jay, good morning.
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. And Jay, I would love to dive right into Triple Crown talk and Belmont. And, of course, you'll head out Sunday for Long Island. But it's been such a tumultuous week in California. I wanted to get a rundown from you on the news items, and in a lot of cases, I think the racing fan and stakeholder and horse player community is a little weary of this. But at the same time, it's important, obviously, and it was nonstop starting Tuesday with Senator Feinstein's press release.
Right, yeah. No, it's the second time that she's called for the suspension of racing at Santa Anita. And the reaction was the same as previous. I mean, Santa Anita's going to keep racing. She can say what she wants, but the fact of the matter is that since late March, the safety record at Santa Anita has actually been quite good. It seems like everybody's wanting to, or not everybody, a number of people are wanting to score political points over this. And so she was the latest. I mean, we talked about this the first time she put out a statement about it. I've been doing this for a long time. I'm based in Southern California, and, she's been a state senator for a long time, and prior to that was the mayor of San Francisco, and I have no recollection of her ever being at the racetrack. So
there were a few things, and it makes you wonder, actually, too. I mean, where she's receiving direction and the information. And there was, there's been a couple of things that that came out in this press release, and also yesterday, Governor Newsom, he actually more or less voiced the support for what the CHRB is actually dealing with, the opportunity to change the rules whereby they can suspend a meet or change dates or move dates. And one of the things that came out, Jay, in the governor's statement yesterday, where he said, if we can regulate horse race meets, we should have the authority to suspend licenses when animal or human welfare is at risk. Well, I maybe it's news to them, but the human and the animal are at risk every time the gates open, and in the morning when there's an inherent risk in the game.
Right. I mean, that's what we discussed back when this crisis first happened, and people were speaking up about it. And look, it's been, there are legitimate things that can be done here, but inherent risk is an accurate portrayal of any performance horse endeavor, whether it's trail riding, show jumping, dressage, cross country at the Olympics, whatever you want to do, there is an inherent risk, and racing's included. Some are more riskier than others, but the only way you're going to have zero injuries in a performance horse endeavor is to not have horses. They will get horses hurt running in a field. So that's, there is inherent risk with this. Until now, people have accepted that as part of the game and have looked for ways to make it less risky. And I think those things are continuing in terms of trying to make it less risky. But I think the notion that there can be no risk is a dangerous one because it's not realistic.
Well, and that gets us to the PETA statement, too, which came later Tuesday after Senator Feinstein's statement, which also makes you wonder about the seeming coordination of a lot of this, where they called for a widespread suspension nationwide, essentially, until the rest of the sport adopts the somewhat nebulous and so far not even implemented rules in California. It was mystifying. And one of the words that one of the things that was used, Jay, with PETA was the elimination of fatalities. It's an impossible goal. It's an impossible goal.
And I'll go back to what I said on your show. And on the show that I do in Southern California when this all started several months ago, if you think PETA is your friend, you are naive. Yep. And I'll just put that on, you know, repeat until those who think that they're going to help realize they're not.
That part of it was basically the dust was settling on those pieces of news. And then yesterday, a couple of things came out at Santa Anita itself that only further complicate what has already been an arduous 4 months for the horsemen and for owners. And the suggestion that veterinarians should sign off on entries days in advance of the horse actually running is just another fool's errand, it seems.
Well, I know that Santa Anita wanted to do something like that earlier this meet after the spike in injuries and fatalities happened. It didn't get going. And now they're going to try it again. I don't know how vets or horsemen will embrace that, but we'll see. I mean, that's what they want to do, and I don't know how you. There just seems to be a lot of questions over liability with something like that. Would there be liability? I don't know. Would horsemen ask the track to sign off on some sort of liability for the track service as well? I don't know. There's a lot of questions regarding it. I want to just see how it plays out. I know Santa Anita wants to do it, and I know they wanted to do it before, and it just didn't start to get going. The first day of entries that this would be applicable for would be for next Friday's racing, a week from today. Entries for that will be taken this weekend. And we'll see what transpires in terms of the entry process. So, to be determined.
Although I have not seen official word in print, I have not checked. This is something normally I would guess what Steve Anderson might handle on a news front, Jay. But report that Dan Eidson has been let go essentially was functioning as the racing secretary in the absence of the person that has the title. Eidson had written the condition book and had basically kind of stepped up to handle things in a real vacuum, and late yesterday afternoon, word was circulating that Dan had been let go.
But I had heard the same thing late yesterday. I haven't seen any official word on it yet. It was too late yesterday to get official confirmation, and I know that Steve Anderson is going to be out there at the end of the day to get official confirmation on that and on the set situation, entry form situation that we were just discussing as well. I think it would be an unfortunate development if Dan left. I think he's been a very valuable person in the sport over the years, and certainly at Santa Anita this winter, helping to write the book and having a book that largely went. So I don't know what transpired recently to change things, but I know he has a ton of respect from the horsemen in Southern California for what he's done over the years, and certainly for what he's done this winter. So I think by next week when I'm on, I'll know more, and certainly we should know more later today. But like I said, I have a lot of respect for him, and that would be unfortunate.
Well, two non-racing events that are certainly going to be continue to be in the news, and I refer first to the Fasig Tipton 2-year-old in training sale that is going to have a breeze show on Monday, there hasn't been a lot actually written about on that front. Breeders' Cup has been at Santa Anita this week, and Jay, from what we understand, it's full steam ahead for the Breeders' Cup in November at Santa Anita. They have not made any seeming suggestions that they're not going forward for the fall.
I mean, that's my understanding. I think you'd have to get somebody on the Breeders' Cup to comment on that, but there's no indication that there's going to be any movement of the event from Santa Anita. So, and like I said, since there was obviously a terrible spike in injuries in the earlier part of the meet, since late March, when the weather improved, there's been less racing as well. There have been 3 fatalities in now nearly 2 months. That's a very good safety record. And I know that most people out here believe that, with the current superintendent process in place, and experts that have been brought in to oversee some things and tweak some things, that the surface is in terrific shape. So it seems that the Breeders' Cup is of the belief that going forward here is the right move. So I've heard nothing that would indicate that there's any movement afoot to not have it. It's kind of neat.
Well, and until we hear otherwise, that's the way it's going to be. Jay, before we talk about Belmont and what lies ahead next week as we look to the final leg of the Triple Crown season, I do want to mention some positive racing outcomes. And a big step forward from Vino Rosso, looking back to the weekend at Santa Anita, to win the Gold Cup.
Yeah, it was a really shrewd move on the part of Todd Pletcher and Mike Rapoli and Vinny Viola to send him out here. It was a smaller field, grade one race. They were looking at the Met Mile, which is obviously coming up probably the best race of the year in the country next Saturday, a week from tomorrow, on the Belmont card. I don't even know that we should call it the Belmont card. I think we should call it the Met Mile card.
That's what I've been doing. That's better, what I've been doing.
Better race. The distance was probably more suitable to him than the mile might have been, just a little abrupt. But he ran a terrific race to ship out here and beat Giftbox, who obviously loves this track and is a much better horse out here. He had just won the Santa Anita Handicap a month and a half earlier at the same track and distance, and he beat him on the square. So it was a terrific performance for him. And importantly, over the track and at the distance at which the Breeders' Cup Classic is going to be run later this year.
Exactly. And, in fact, that came up in a lot of the conversations we had recapping the weekend, Jay, and that included with Mark Glatt. And I, you know, I feel badly for Glatt, who is having a, you know, as good a meet as you know, an outfit his size can have. And it and as I said to him, I mean, it's got to be a little frustrating to have it come, you know, with this cloud. It's hard to enjoy when there's been this external pressure that doesn't seem to have a release valve.
No, he's had a terrific season. He's an excellent trainer. He doesn't get the headlines that a lot of other people do because he's not involved in the Triple Crown races or the Derby run up every year. But you look at the scope of the kinds of horses he has in his barn, and he performs with sprinters, routers, turf, dirt, old, young. He's an excellent trainer. He's a really bright guy. He's soft-spoken but thoughtful, and
yep.
really, I think he's one of the more underrated people, not only in California but in the game overall.
Well, and he's, you know, he's, it's funny because he's got a sprinter that would be, you know, particularly happy if they run the turf sprint down the hill, and he's got one that would be happy if they run it at 5 furlongs. And the Eddie Haskell story, you know, over the weekend, Jay, both of those claimer to graded stake winners stories were terrific. Eddie Haskell, but the Basilica story is unbelievable.
Well, she's just a machine. Claimed by Jerry Hollendorfer for a partnership over a year ago, and she's won more than $1 million now, and 12 for 14, and multiple graded wins, and two grade ones, including the race the other day in the Gamely. And she just wants to beat you. She gets in a dogfight, and she's just going to perform. And so she's 12 for 14 for her current connections, but 12 out of her last 13. The only time she got beat was in the Matriarch last fall at Del Mar, which, you know, came up a dynamite race. And she ran well. She finished fourth, just wasn't good enough on the day. But the distance might also be slightly short of optimum for her at a mile. I think going out to a mile and eighth is more in her wheelhouse. But, you know, she also ran against Uni and horses like that. And Daddy is a Legend. It was a pretty salty race. But she beat a good field the other day with horses like Rimsky in there. So it was, and she's just a machine. She just continually runs strong races time after time, and every 4 weeks or so they wind her up, and there she goes.
It's unbelievable. And finally, before we talk New York, how great for Carla Gaines and her team, Bolo. At this late date, to come back like that, and I know that, you know, some of it was circumstantial up on the front end, and you know, some people get dismissive, but it's still a incredible achievement for a horseman to, you know, bring a horse back at this age and win a race like the Shoemaker.
Well, for perspective, I mean, he ran in the same Kentucky Derby that American Pharoah won, and American Pharoah's two-year-olds are hitting the track this year, and
yeah.
You know, Bolo's still running. So that gives some perspective on his longevity. And he's been through a lot. He was off for a long, long time. He's been gelded, and obviously, so this is what he's going to continue doing. He's always been a really popular horse out here because he's a gorgeous horse. He's just one of the best-looking horses on the circuit out here. And Carlos did a magnificent job with him. Yeah, they gave him a chance to run on the dirt at three because that's the time you're going to give it a try. But he's always been a better grass horse, and it was really neat to see him come back from the issues that he's had, given the time to get ready and come back and have a comeback race, and then to win this race. And you're right; the race came up well for him. Got a lot of pace, and Giroux rode a terrific race on the front end. But, you know, several horses took shots at him, and they couldn't get to him. He was fighting them all off down the stretch. So it was really a neat win to see. And again, like we were talking about with Glatt earlier, it's just nice to see some new faces in the winner's circle. It's helpful and healthy for the game, especially out here where there's so many horses and so few barns. You need to cast a wider net to just make the whole program go.
Yeah, it was one of the nice stories, and it was great to get Carl on. And we did get an update, by the way, about Louis, the very popular Clocker's Corner dog. They think that the illness was prompted by an insect bite. And so there was some positive news on the Louis front. So,
well, yeah, no, Louis's out there every morning with Carl. He's just a really friendly, beautiful yellow lab, and he's always making himself at home up in the box seat section where, near the finish line, where Gary Young clocks, and that's where Carla watches her horses breeze in the morning, and a number of other trainers congregate there. There's kind of two spots where people congregate: Clocker's Corner and the area around where Gary Young clocks. And Louis's a regular and very popular. A couple of dogs that are out there every morning that people really like. You know, Zoe Cadman's dog MacDoodle is part of that menagerie. So, yeah, when Louis wasn't doing so well the other day, I mean, obviously it was great concern for him. So I'm glad that the initial reports on his health are that he's improving.
Exactly. Jay, let's look ahead to New York, and so that I don't forget it. Is there a number in Vegas on King Umberto visits?
I think we're going to set it, Steve, this week, this coming week, at 5.5. I think that's a good gambling number.
Big number.
I set it at 4.5 last year and just, you know, blew right through that. So I think we're going to have to put it to 5.5. I think that's a good number. It's going to land on one side or the other. It'd be 5 or 6 visits. So I think that's where we're going to put it.
Well, looking forward to it, and Jay and the boys fixtures, as I am at King Umberto this week. Jay, some thoughts about what's going on? I think we're a little surprised. I brought this up yesterday that I thought there would be some horses that kind of jumped in at the quarter pole, so to speak, and got involved in this.
In
Belmont, I thought there'd be some additional faces that showed up, but it doesn't seem like it.
No, I mean, there's just a number of horses that especially coming out of the Derby, that you would have thought normally would have maybe skipped the Preakness but come back in the Belmont. They're just not ready. You know, horses like Game Winner, for instance. You know, obviously the Derby winner, after getting sick, he's just sort of getting back in training for a summer campaign, Country House. So, you know, unfortunately, the ranks really thinned out. The attrition rate from the Derby to the Belmont is pretty startling in terms of participation. And to me, it speaks really to the high quality of a horse like War of Will. It's going to be the only horse to run in all three Triple Crown races this year. You know, won the Preakness after the tough trip in the Derby, and I think it really speaks to his high quality that he's going to dance every dance in this year's Triple Crown, and no one else is.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Still, it's always intriguing, and you know, there's some of the themes that really this era, the Todd Pletcher story to me is really the counterbalance, Jay, to, you know, the critique he has to endure Derby time. There really should be an equal amount of praise for, you know, what has been a sparkling record in the Belmont, and it came within a couple of noses of a couple more wins in recent years.
No, he's had a terrific record in the Belmont. He really has a down pat for the, you know, run in the Derby, skip the Preakness, go to the Belmont aspect of things, or a similar analogous schedule like Rags to Riches, who would run in the Oaks and then waited to the Belmont and won. But his horses have performed admirably in the Belmont Stakes over the last decade plus, and he's got a couple of good shots this year, so I think he'll again make his presence felt quite strongly in that race.
Well, it'll be a fun week. It always is, and the 3 days of racing, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, with I think the numbers 13 graded stakes starting on Thursday. So we should have a lot of fun. We got the draw Tuesday again at Citi Field, which was a big hit last year. So meanwhile,
yeah. That's some Giants. Two Titans of the Diamond will be squaring off later, too.
It was my first trip, actually, to Citi Field last year. That I was glad about it.
But they put the statue out front, too, afterwards, you know, in honor of your pretty cool.
DRF Bribman, everybody, heading toward New York, and we will see you, I suppose, Monday.
That will be the plan.
Jay, thanks a lot. I appreciate everything.
And drinking Umberto Sunday night, then you might see me just for round one.
Perfect. We may coordinate that visit.
Wayne off the plane with his horses back in the day. Jay off the plane in New York, right to King Umberto.
There you go. It's perfect. I love it. Jay, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
Jay Bribman, everybody. DRF Bribman, and a little bit of the California news, good and bad, and heading toward New York for the last leg. And, Jay gives us the Derby Watch reports starting with the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner, and then all the way till next week. Let's take a timeout, and I guess we didn't even break in hour one, did we? We'll take the break right here, start of hour two. Ed DeRosa is going to start us off. We'll get some thoughts from Ed. Had a nice pop last week with Honey Bunny, see what he's focused on. Then a little bit, Nick Tamro, second half of hour two, as well as Hammer and Marty McGee, and more at the races. Back after this, weekend preview.